Erevin Daf Memches. We're on Menzayin Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. We're going to be beginning with the words Hanadichre, about a dozen lines from the bottom of the Amud. Let's go back to Daf Memhei. Mishnah on the very bottom of Memhei Amud Aleph introduces us to a machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Nuri the Chachamim regarding somebody who was sleeping during Bein Hashmashos. As we've been discussing now extensively here in this fourth parak of Erevin, during Bein Hashmashos, a person is going to be able to be kohen makom shvisa if he elects to choose another location to be his point of center. The Mishnah brings down a memhei, a machlokes between Tanaim, as to what would be the case in which a person is sleeping during the Bein Hashmashos period, thereby being unconscious, thereby not making a kinyan. What happens to such an individual machlokes? The two shittos were Rav Yochanan Nuri and the Chachamim. Rav Yochanan Nuri is of the opinion that such an individual has 2,000 amas in every direction, despite the fact that he's asleep, he's still going to be kohen makom shvisa. On the other hand, Chachamim say no, ain lo ala arba amas, he only has 4 amas. So this opinion of Rav Yochanan Nuri is that a sleeping person can in fact be kohen makom shvisa. Has been discussed and deliberated since then, the Gemara finally concluded that according to Rav Yochanan Nuri, not only can a sleeping person be kohen makom shvisa, but even inanimate objects can be kohen makom shvisa as well. And so therefore the conclusion of the Gemara is that sleeping people, inanimate objects, kelim, they all can be kona makom shvisa. What if a kli is owned by a non-Jew going into Shabbos? What would be the case, what would be the halacha over there? And so that was part of yesterday's daf, Memzayin Amud Beis. And at the two dots towards the top of the Amud, a debate amongst Amoraim. There were two shittas that we were introduced to. One was the shita Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel that says, Achef Sein Achri, that items owned by a non-Jew, Ein Konim Shvisa. So there's no Kenyan Shvisa, they don't acquire their location. And the Gemara says, presumably, this is both going according to the shittas of the Chachamim and Rav Yochanan Nuri, although the Gemara went back and forth on that issue. On the other hand, Rav Chiya Bar Avin says in the name of Rav Yochanan that no, Chef Sein Achri are in fact going to be Kona Shvisa. Now that's an interesting position and it's very hard to understand. Meaning, why should it be that if you have an item that's owned by a non-Jew, the non-Jewish owner obviously has no subscription to Tchum, the non-Jewish owner is not Shomer Shabbos, meaning he has no requirement to abide by the laws of Shabbos. And yet, items that he owns is going to be subject to some sort of Tchum. So, the answer is yes, and the explanation that's given by Rav Yochanan is that it's a gzera. The decree is Balim Denachri Atu Balim Disrael. The Chachamim want us to get into a mindset that when something is owned, so it's going to be following the tchum of its owner. And so thereby, let's start like this. If we were getting used to the idea that items owned by a non-Jew do not in fact have tchum, so it may lead us to the belief that items owned by a Yisrael also don't subscribe to a tchum as well. So just basically to habituate us to always consider that items owned by somebody are in fact going to be having the tchum of the of its owner. So the Chachamim made a blanket gzera, and that is to say that any item that is owned is in fact going to have the tchum of its owner. Ad kan, that takes us to where we got up to yesterday, and we're going to pick it up right away with the following episode. So there was these rams that made it to the town of Mavrachta. So as a little bit of background over here, first of all, we're describing a yantiv, and as we discussed a little bit, and we're going to be discussing more in Masechta Beitza, a yantiv, one can make acquisition, can make purchases of food for the purposes of yantiv. In terms of exchanging money for the food, so that's not going to be done in yantiv. You'll buy it on credit, and you will then go ahead and make a cheshbon after yantiv. But meanwhile, on yantiv itself, you can go ahead and you can buy food and you can buy animals for tzorach yantiv. These rams that were brought into the town of Mavrachta, so they were brought in by non-Jews, and they were brought in from outside of Tchum. So the non-Jews, obviously, having no need to subscribe to any laws of Tchum, so they brought these rams in from outside of Tchum into the town of Mavrachta. Mavrachta, we're going to assume for the purpose of this Gemara, is a town that has a mechitza around it. It's an enclosed area. Now, Sharlei Rava live ne'mechuzel le'mizba minayu. So Rava gave the following allowance, and that is those people traveling from the town of Mechuza who were coming into the town of Mavrachta on Yom to go ahead and to purchase these rams, so they could purchase these rams, and not only that, but bring them back to the town of Mechuza. Now, in order to get from Mechuza to the town of Mavrachta, so an Erev Tchum had to have been set in place. the distance between Mechuzah and Mavrachta is more than 2,000 mil. So in order to facilitate traveling from Mechuzah to Mavrachta, so the members of Mechuzah made an Erev in order to be able to get from the town of Mechuzah to the town of Mavrachta. So if you think about now all the various factors that are going on in terms of what Rav is allowing, so first of all, we have the animals that during the Banish Meshes of Yantav were owned by non-Jews, brought into this town of Mavrachta, but in order to get into the town of Mavrachta, were taken out of their tchum, assuming, and which is going to be part of the Gemara's discussion in just a moment, assuming that they do have a tchum, so they were brought from outside the tchum to get into the town of Mavrachta. So the idea that, first of all, they could be, they can go anywhere in the town of Mavrachta, in of itself is a discussion, which we're going to discuss momentarily. And on top of that, now the members of the town of Mechuzah are going to be able to purchase these animals and bring them all the way back to the Mechuzah, thereby basically assuming the tchum of the animals, or better stated, the tchum of the animals now are going to be assuming whatever the owners from the town of Mechuzah have. Okay, so that's a lot, and the Gemara now discusses whether or not the Psak of Rava is in fact going to be an accepted Psak. So Amalei Ravina LaRava Mai Daitech Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Chevsei Nachri and Konish Shisa. So the Gemara says this all would work, but only under the idea that we subscribe to Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel yesterday's daf says Chevsei Nachri are not Konish Shisa, which means to say that they are tichum less. Okay, not a good word, but one that certainly describes exactly what we are discussing. So it is, they are tchumless. And so as such, so when they're brought into the town of Mavrachta, they have yet to have acquired any kind of tchum. And when the Jews of Mechuzah go ahead and purchase these animals, so now the animals are going to fall under the tchum of the Jewish owners of this town of Mechuzah. Good. This all works if you subscribe to the position of Yehuda Meshmol. However, but we have a general rule in Klalei Apsak that when, if there's a machlokes between Shmuel and Rav Yochanan, we follow like Rav Yochanan. The Amar Rabbi Chiyabir Bar Avin Amar Rav Yochanan Chefsei Nachri Konan Shisa. And as we just got done concluding, according to the Shita of Rav Yochanan, Chefsei Nachri are in fact Konan Shisa. They acquire their Makam Shisa, Gzera Balam De Nachri, Atu Balam De Yisrael, as a rabbinic decree, as we just got done explaining. So good. So now we subscribe to the Shita of Rav Yochanan. So if in fact we subscribe to the Shita of Rav Yochanan, so now we have a significant issue. Because these animals that were owned by non-Jews going into Yontiv are now subscribing to the Tchum of their non-Jewish owner. Which means to say that these animals started off Tchum-wise well outside the town of Mavrachta. So they were taken on Yontiv to the town of Mavrachta. That in itself already is going outside of the Tchum from where they started off on Yontiv. So, Hadar Amar Rava Lizdav Niliv Ne Mavrachta. So Rava says, okay, I accept what you're saying, and I am now going to agree that the halacha falls like Rav Yochanan, and that these animals going into Yontiv had the tchum of their non-Jewish owners. And when they were brought into Mavrachta the next day on the day of Yontiv, so that it's true that they were taken out of their tchum. However, I will say this, at least the members of the town of Mavrachta, the Jewish population in the town of Mavrachta, they could go ahead and they could buy these animals and make use of the animals for Yom Tov. So, Hadar Amar Rava, that's exactly what Rava says. Lizdav Livnei Mavrachta. Let at least the people of Mavrachta go ahead and purchase these animals. Dekula Mavrachta, Lididu, Kedal Amaz Damya. Because the town of Mavrachta, vis-a-vis the people of Mavrachta, is going to be considered Dalet Amos. This takes us back to the beginning of the fourth parak, and this is what we discussed as a debate between Rabbi Gamliel versus Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Gamliel says that when something's taken out of Tchum forcibly and brought into an enclosed area, so in the very least, you can walk within the entire enclosed area. On the other hand, Rabbi Yoshua said no, that when you leave Tchum, even if you go into an enclosed area, you cannot go more than Dalet Amos. So Rava says, look, in that regard, we're going to pass like Rabbi Gamliel. So even though these animals were taken out of Tchum, meaning going into Yontiv, the Beinash Mashos of Yontiv, they do accept the Tchum of their owners, despite the fact that their owners are not Jewish, but we subscribe to Rav Yochanan, that Chevtzei Nachri do in fact take on the Tchum of their owner, so therefore they do have the Tchum of their owner, and when brought into Mavrachta the next day, that meant that they went beyond Tchum, but at least let's subscribe to the Shita Rav Gamliel, where these animals now could be taken throughout the total area of the town of Mavrachta, the town that they got into on Yontiv itself. The Gemara concludes that the first part of the of the daf. We continue in the Gemara. We are on the bottom of the Amud. Tini Rabbi Chiya. Rabbi Chiya taught the following braisa, and that is Cherem Shebein Tchumi Shabbos. So if I have this Cherem, okay, not totally clear exactly what the word Cherem means, but for the purposes of our discussion, let's assume that the Cherem over here is some sort of fishnet. I will describe in just a moment the scenario over here. It's between two Tchumim, Shabbos, Sarech Mechitza Shavar Zal Hafsika. So you need an iron wall in order to separate, in order to make a separation. So what's going on over here? So again, there is a significant amount of background necessary just to understand. What we're describing over here are two towns, each one of them now having a tchum, and the tchum of the two towns happen to make contact with one another. Basically, the end of the tchum of these two towns border one on the other. So that means to say that if you're living in one town, so you can basically, your limits of Shabbos and Yontiv will basically be able to take you to the edge of where the person in the other town can go to based on where his tchum gets to. So if we were to draw now a line running down the middle between these two towns, so that would be the edge of tchum for both of these towns. It also happens to be, more background to this scenario, and that is that there's a pond in the center right where this border is. This pond, part of the pond is within the tchum of one town, and part of the pond is within the tchum of the other town. And now, as far as Allah is concerned, can each member of each town go up to the pond and go to the area of the pond that is within their tchum and go ahead and draw water and bring it back? This question would seem to be relevant only for Yontif, not for Shabbos. As for Shabbos, Karen would be also, but in Yontif, Karen would be permitted. So anyway, so would one be allowed to do this? So on this, Rabbi Chiya's Braisa says, yes, but only under the circumstances where I have an iron wall separating the two parts of the pond. Because what the concern may in fact be, or let's say a little bit better, what the concern is that there's going to be a little cross-contamination. That means to say that the water you're drawing from the pond may not be coming from your side of the pond, but may be coming from the other side of the pond. And that means now to say that you're going to be taking water from what was outside of your tchum now into your tchum. And that's something that you're not allowed to do on Yontif. That would be an Isser. And so therefore, if there's a wall now in the middle of this pond, making sure that the water on one side remains separate from the water on the other side, so then there would be no problem. This is all within this Braisa of Rabbi Chiya. The Braisa says it really succinctly, but all this is included within the Braisa. Now, after the Braisa was said over, Mechaye Chala, we're on the top of Mem Chesav and Aleph, Mechaye Chala, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, so he laughed at the Braisa, meaning he mocked the Braisa. Parts of the Braisa seemed to him to be silly. And what the Gemara is seek for is now clarification. My time aka mechayech. Why exactly do you find this braisa to be so silly? So maybe the issue is that we are following like the shita of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, and that is lichumra. Rav Yochanan ben Nuri says that chefse hefker kone makom, as we have already concluded, since the Mishnah in Memhei, so we're still within the sheet of Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, and we know that he's of the subscription that not only is a sleeping person going to be kone makom shisa, but even inanimate objects and inanimate objects that are ownerless are going to be kone makom shisa. And so over here, this concern that the water, which is considered to be now an ownerless body of water, so it itself is going to be kone makom shisa. So for you to be able to pull water from the other side to go to your side would be a violation of tchum. So you're saying that the problem you're having with the braisa is that this braisa is subscribed to Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, but more to the point, Rav Yochanan ben Nuri and the strict conclusion that Rav Yochanan ben Nuri arrives at, v'yusfir le'karabana l'kula, and he's holding like the chachamim who are going to be mekel, he meaning Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, who is laughing at the braisa. And so maybe the Gemara says, maybe that's the issue. So mishum desav l'kula man d'ni l'chumra mechayech alaha. So the Gemara says, well, that doesn't make any sense. Just because you take a more lenient position, but somebody takes a more machmer position, but a more machmer position that's grounded, meaning supported by Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, and you're going to laugh at somebody who's holding like a more strict position? So the Gemara says, that can't be. It can't be the reason why you're going to be mocking somebody else within that position. So ela mishum detanya. So the Gemara says, so it must be based on the following, and that is Naros HaMoshchim, Amayos HaNovim, Harein Karagli Kol Adam. So the Gemara says, okay, the Braisa says that when I have rivers that are flowing, and wellsprings that are flowing as well. So they're ragle kol adam, meaning they're in motion, and because they're in motion, so they're not kone makom shisa. So this is something we just established a couple days ago, is that any body of motion, any body of water that's in motion during the Beinus Rosh period and is not stationary does not acquire a makom shisa. And so maybe over here, the reason why we should not be concerned whatsoever about tchum and going beyond tchum is because this body of water, since it's in motion, never was kone makom shisa. The Gemara says that's fine, but v'dilma b'mekunasim. But it could also very well be that this body of water that we're discussing is a body of water that's stationary and not in motion, and so therefore there should not be a concern of ikone makom shisa. So what we have right now is a lack of understanding of why mak the brisa. The brisa over here says that we have to make a wall within this pond, so I do not collect the water from the other side in order to bring it back home with me, because then I would be taking it beyond tchum. And as far as the idea that who was ever the author of the brisa subscribing to Rav Yochanan ben Nuri, that in of itself should be fine. It's a tenable position. The fact that the water is kone makom shisa because it's stationary, so we can assume that it was a stationary body of water. So where does that land us right now? It lands us with a difficulty in terms of why would anyone make fun of such a brisa? So it's the solution that the brisa here is presenting, which is to make an iron wall separating the two sides of the pond. So a simple wall made up of reeds, and by the way, perhaps that's what the word cherim over here is describing. You get that sense from Rashi that we're talking about some sort of walls made up of reed that are looking to separate the two sides. And the Gemara is now saying, well, look, if you're going to use that, and that's not going to be acceptable, the Aili Behu Maya, because water is just simply going to go through the reeds, and there's going to be the cross-contamination that you're trying to avoid. But the Gemara says, fine, but if I use an iron wall, we're going to arrive at the same problem. Shalbar zon nami, aile buhumaya, so water is still going to come across. Now, what the Gemara is assuming over here is that even with an iron wall, the iron wall is not going to go all the way down to the bed of the pond, but rather the iron wall is going to go down to Antvachim, not any further than that. And so under those circumstances, if that's true, so now we understand what's comical about the brisa, in that you're telling me that a wall of reeds is no good, but you rather you have to use an iron wall, but if the iron wall isn't going to the ground, so what did you gain with the iron wall? Okay, so v'dilma, tzarech ve'in lo takana, kamar. So the Gemara says, well, maybe we misunderstood the brisa altogether. Sometimes the brisa is saying that there's a requirement that's so absurd, impractical, what the brisa really means to say is then that there is no solution. So Ela Mishum de Kalhushi Kiluchachamim b'mayim. So the Gemara says, okay, and that's not it as well. But rather, the reason why he laughed at the brisa, why he didn't understand the brisa, is because we have a general leniency as it relates to water. We've made this point already numerous times here in our Masechta, and that is that when you're making mechitzos tulus, where you're making suspended walls in general are not considered walls vis-a-vis the halachas of mechitza. Suspended walls over water, so there we're makel. The Gemara says, "Al mishum dekal hu shekilu chachamim mamayim kid Rabbi Tavla debay minei Rabbi Tavla me Rav." The following question was asked from Rav: "Mechitza tuliya mahu shetati bechurva? Can we use a suspended wall in order to serve as a wall in a churva, just a ruined area, meaning area that does not have walls on it, but in other words, it's ground, it's dry land? So amalei mechitza tuliya materas ela b'mayim." The only time that mechitzas tluyas work is only when it comes to water. Kalhushi kiluchacham im mamayim. It happens to be a leniency as it relates to water in of itself. So as a leniency, in order to draw water, so they allow for suspended walls. Outside of that, they do not allow for suspended walls. And so the Gemara concludes that the reason why the brisa is difficult to understand is because once you have a wall, so halachically the walls drop and the walls go down. And so therefore, we do have halakhically a separation between the two sides of the pond, and it doesn't really matter whether it's made up of iron or it's made up of anything. We have the concept of mechitzas tuluya. We're continuing in the Gemara v'chachamim omrim ein lo ella arba. We are now going all the way back to the Mishnah Memhei, and the Gemara now is going to be looking at some of the next parts of the Mishnah. You take a look at the Mishnah carefully on the very bottom of Memhei Amud Aleph, as we were introduced to the Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar Omer v'hu b'amtza. So Rabbi Elazar says that when a person is only given four amos on Shabbos, So he's in the middle of those four amas. And Rav Yehuda Amer le'iza ruach shiyirtza yelech. And Rav Yehuda says you can go in any direction that you want. So that means to say that you have the four amas and you can go in any direction that you want. And the Gemara is bothered because what Rav Yehuda seems to be doing is repeating the position of the Chachamim. Meaning immediately after Rav Yochanan ben Nuri back in the Mishnah, then the Mishnah brought in the position of the Chachamim, ein lo ella arba amos. So you have arba amos. Okay. And what the Gemara is assuming right now is that Rav Yehuda and the Chachamim are basically saying the same thing, but if that's true, then Rav Yehuda is just repeating what the Chachamim is saying, and that would be superfluous within the Mishnah. Gemara's assumption is the Mishnah wouldn't have something like that. So Rav Yehuda, ayin tanakama, amar Rav Shmona, shmoni kabeinahu. So the Gemara says, yeah, there is a difference between Rav Yehuda and the Tanakhama, and the Chachamim. The Chachamim of the Mishnah, as we're going to see in just a moment, is Shitas Rav Meir. And what Rav Meir really allows is four amas in every direction. That means to say that if you're in a position where you only have four amos, like for example, you were in Kona Makom Shisa, and you only have four amos, so according to the Shita of Rav Meir, it doesn't read so well in the Mishnah, but now the Gemara is saying, once you contrast the Chachamim to Rav Yehuda, this is the way you're going to read the Mishnah, and that is that you're going to have four amos in every direction, which obviously gives you a total of 8x8 amos. Tanya Amahachi. The Gemara quotes the Brisa supporting this as well. Yesh lo shmona al shmona divrei Rav Meir. Rav Meir says it's 8x8. V'amar Rav machlokas lahalech. Now it's true that we do have a debate in terms of how much area you get if you're not acquiring a makom shisa. Do you get 4x4? Do you get 8x8? So that's true. That's the machlokas. But the machlokas is only limited to the ability to carry. Aval litaltel divrei halkol arba amos in tvei lo. But in order to carry, so then there is no debate. Traversing a machlokas of whether it's 4x4 or 8x8. Carrying, it's only 4x4. The hanidala amos, I'm sorry, before we get to the next part of the Gemara, ad kansa, that gets us to the end of this section, vis-a-vis, when Rabbi Yehuda says that a person is given dala amos and he can choose whichever dala amos he wants in order to go to, Rabbi Yehuda seems to be repeating the position of the Chachamim, and the Gemara notes no, there's a significant difference between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. The Chachamim is the sheet of Rav Meir, and actually get four amos in every direction, which makes for a total of 8x8. Masha'inke, according to Rabbi Yehuda, no, it's four amos in either direction, the direction you want, but once you choose that direction, that's it. In that direction, you're only given 4x4. Good. The Gemara now asks a very basic question. Hani dala amos hechiksiva. Where do these dala amos, where do we find them written in the Torah? Now, what is the Gemara making, what is the Gemara questioning, what is the Gemara looking to find the source for? In the Gemara itself, it's not particularly clear. The Gemara seems to be asking, not seems to. The Gemara is asking about dala amos, but what aspect of dala amos? So if you're working with context, meaning if you're looking at our Gemara in the context of our Gemara, so the dala amos that we've been discussing is a dala amos that's afforded to a person in the event that he doesn't have a makom shisa. Or, you go back to the beginning of the perek, we could be talking about the dala amos when a person is extracted from his tchum, and now he's outside of his tchum, so there too he only has four amos. So in the context of our perek here in Erevin, the question could be a simple question of, how do we know about this concept of dala amos when a person does not have a makom shisa and he does not have tchum? That could be one way to understand the question. The Gemara could also be asking in more general terms about the whole concept of dala amos, meaning a person is not allowed to carry dala amos b'rishus rabim. A person acquires anything that's within his four amos, meaning it could very well be that the question of the Gemara over here is more expansive and is really incorporating dala amos from many different areas of halacha. Although, to be fair, the Gemara is really not that clear about which aspect it's asking. And really the context would seem to indicate that we're just asking regarding the dalin amos of having been taken out of tchum or not having a makom shisa. Whatever the case is, the Gemara is answer, v'hani dal amos hechiksiva, k'detanya, we learned in the following braisa. Shavu ish tachtav, so the pasuk says as far as the people are going ahead and collecting the man, so people are going to be sitting underneath themselves. So, right, a little bit difficult to translate in the English, but basically they're sitting in the area in which they're in. Now the context of the pasuk over here is the collection of the man. And the assumption is that for those people who were collecting the man and for whatever reason ended up going outside the tchum, so at least they're going to get tachtav, they're going to get the area underneath them. So ketachtav, bekama tachtav. Now what are we talking about the area underneath? How are we measuring that area underneath? So it's going to be the same as his height. It means to say that when a person lies down, so that area created underneath, when the person lies down, that's the amount of area that a person is receiving. And so now we have to figure out how much does a person cover when he lies down. Gufo shalosh amos. So a person's height is a total of 3 amos. So when he lies down, that already covers 3 amos. The amakade le pashit yada veraglav. An additional amma in order to stretch out his hands and his legs. Div Reb Meir, that is Shitas Reb Meir. Reb Yehuda Omer, Gufa Shalosh Amos. He starts off with the same assumption that the average human person is 3 amos in height. And Va'amma Kidei Shito Chifetz Mitachas Margalosav Omeniach Tachas Merashosav. And you're going to need another amma because in the event that while you're lying down, you want to transfer something from your legs to your head, so that extra amma is there in order to facilitate that transfer. My Beinayhu, so basically each one of them is describing for Amos, each one of them is using the person lying down. How do we get that extra Amma? Because the person himself is only 3 Amos. So it's either through the stretching of his arms or it's through the passing of an item. The Gemara wants to know what's the difference between them. Ika Beinayhu, Arba Amos Mitzum Tzamos. The difference is going to be whether or not it's going to be exactly 4 Amos. Rashi writes over here that according to Rav Yehuda, it's going to be Mitzum Tzamos. Rav Yehuda was the one who says that it's going to be the passing of the item from your feet up to your head. That is going to be 4 amos exactly, as opposed to stretching. So stretching could be just even a little bit more than 4 amos. Okay. A discussion that's had over here in Tosfos, and a discussion that Tosfos has in a number of other places as well, is what is the average height of a person? Now, I asked the question, we just got done learning in the Gemara, the average height of a person, 3 amos. Which, generally, if you think about it, right, it works with what we know an amma to be. An amma is somewhere within the range of 1.5 to 2 feet. So we're somewhere in the range to 4.5 to 6 feet. I know 4.5 is a little short, but 6 feet is a little tall in terms of averages. Okay, it's somewhere in the middle over there. However, Tosfos points out over here that we have a major machlokas amongst the Rishonim. When the Gemara says that the height of a person is 3 ammas, are we going from his feet to his shoulders? Or are we going from his feet to a head? And that is a major machlokas. Tosu cites a number of sources that would indicate that when we say that the height of a person is 3 amos, it goes up to his shoulders, but that does not include his head, meaning the head is above 3 amos, right? Gemara's in Baba Basra, which seems to support this as well. Anyway, a major discussion in Tosu's in terms of the measuring. If you remember, we just had this discussion, same discussion, not so long ago when talking about the measurement of a mikvah. The measurement of a mikvah in terms of volume is 40 sa. In terms of linear measurement is 3 by 1 by 1. And why 3 amas by 1 amma by 1 amma? Why do we arrive at that? So when that person goes into the mikvah, his whole body can go into the mikvah in total. In one at one time. And so, if you think about a mikvah that's 3 by 1 by 1, so that would seem to indicate that the person's height in total is going to be 3 amas tall, so that his whole body will be able to go in the mikvah at one time. That gives the indication that the 3 amas are including even the head. But as we already pointed out, and we're just going to repeat, not necessarily, because when the person submerged in the water, so obviously when then what you have is displacement. So when the water starts off as being 3 amas high, and then you put your body in that water, so the water now is going to go up, since the water is now going to go up, so that means to say that it's going to cover your head. Assuming your head is above 3 amas, their head's going to be covered because of the displaced water that's going to go above your shoulders. Anyway, it's good to point out because it comes up a number of times throughout Shas, this machlokas, in terms of the 3 amma height of the average person. Is that including his head or is that not including his head? Anyway, we go back to the Gemara. Amalei Rav Mishar Shalabrei, ki alita lekamid Rav Papa, when you go to Rav Papa, by mine, I want you to ask him the following question. And that is, Arba Amishar Maru, be'amadi dei yavin alei, or be'amishar kodesh yavin alei? Simple question. When we talk about the 4 amas that's given to a person, is it subjective based on his amma, or is it based on an objective amma? And to be clear, when we talk about the amma, it is the measurement from the bend in the elbow to your long finger as you hold your arm straight. Okay. And now when we say that, what we say is that the standard amma, the objective amma, is going to be the average. In other words, if we could take the average of what it is to go from the elbow to the finger, so that is the average amma, and that's going to be what it is. Again, somewhere within the ballpark of 1.5 to 2 feet. Or the other alternative is that when we're measuring amma in this regard, We're actually looking at the person himself, meaning the person in question, who's being given these dalet amos. So maybe we're measuring with four amos that are his amos. And if you think about it, as the Gemara itself is about to point out, that makes a lot of sense. It's very reasonable because we're looking for an area that he would be comfortable in. Well, obviously, if he's very big and he's very tall, so he would be comfortable in four of his amos and not objective amos. So the Gemara asks this question, and again, in the context of the Gemara, so Rav Misharsha says to his son, when you go to Rav Papa, I want you to ask him this question. So, im amar lecha, but before he sends him off, he says, I just want to prepare you for either answer that you receive, because I'm not going to like either answer. Im amar lecha, mashal kodesh yavin alei og melcha bashan matehelav. If he says that it works, it operates with standard amos. So you have a giant. The Gemara uses Og as an example, but as we've said already numerous times, Og just simply means somebody really big. So if we're using standard amos, somebody really big is not going to be happy with four amos. That for him is going to be just simply not enough space. And if we're talking about subjective amos based on what his ama is, so then that's what we're going to give him amale. So here's what I want you to tell Rav Papa, and that is my time alokatani lagabe yeshamra kolav himashu adam. Why is it mentioned in the Mishnah and Kalim? The Mishnah and Kalim, the 17th parak, so goes over a number of measurements that are all subjective, right? The komets of the kohen, numerous other measurements in the Torah which are clearly subjective and not objective. And if the dalet amos that's given to a person is in fact subjective, so that should have been mentioned in the Mishnah and Kalim. And obviously, Rav Misharsha's point is it's not mentioned in the Mishnah and Kalim, and that obviously presents a problem. So he also comes to Rav Papa Amarle, kulehai lo havatanina. So Rav Papa comes back with a very sharp comment, meaning when the son of Rav Misharsha comes over with this question, so Rav Papa says, look, if you're gonna be that critical about everything that's said or not said, and you're going to be learning with that kind of investigative powers, so you're not going to get anywhere in learning and you're not going to go on in learning. And yes, the Gemara seems to be over here making a strong plug for a Bikias, meaning the Gemara wants us to cover. And yeah, there are a lot of questions that you could be asking and they're important. And they do clarify the Gemara, but at the same time, however, got to cover ground. Okay, so certainly, obviously within a Daf Yomi context, it's an easy point to make. It would be a lot harder if we were doing an Ian Shear, and we'd be spending a long time on one daf, but at least within the Daf Yomi community, so this is going to be an easy point to make, and that is sometimes it's required to just simply cover ground and not to ask so many questions. So but he gives an answer, meaning despite the fact that he gave some mussar, he also gave an answer as well. So it's going to be subjective ama. And why is in the Mishnah Kalim? So because it's not always true that we're going to give subjective amas. Mishum deika nanas beivarav. You can have the following situation: a person who is, let's say, a little bit taller, but his extremities are very short. So for that person who's very tall but with short extremities, so when you give him dalet amas, if you're going to work with his amas, his amas happen to be abnormally short. And so therefore, this person, who for the most part is tall, except for his short extremities, so if you're giving him his amos, he's going to be very uncomfortable. It's not going to be good. So you're going to give him presumably standard amos. Or if necessary, I guess you give him even larger ones. But anyway, but there's going to be a circumstance where it can't be subjective. And that's why it's not in the Mishnah in Kalim. Hayushnai miksas amosav shalzeh. Okay. And now we move on to the end of the Mishnah. Okay, we've been sitting on this Mishnah for some time. This takes us all the way back to Daf Memhei. And so now, since then, Memhei, Memvav, Memzayin, today's Daf Memches. So we're now discussing this Mishnah. And the truth of the matter is, it happens to be, we're going to be discussing this Mishnah even further in tomorrow's Daf as well. So we are going to be spending a good amount of time on this Mishnah. In the meantime, however, as we are now approaching the end of the Mishnah, so we had the following scenario at the end of the Mishnah. You had three people in the row, each one of them only having four amos, and they were situated at a distance of each other, where, let's call them now A, B, and C. So A and B, so they were close enough where there was a little bit of overlap between the two of them, where one of their four amos encroached into the other four amos. so that they have a little bit of overlap. And the same thing is true regarding B and C. So they encroach a little bit one into the other as well. And in the Mishnah, what we learned is that for that scenario, so A and B now in the shared area can go ahead and have a shared meal. And B and C in the shared area can also have a shared meal as well. But that was the Mishnah talking about shared area and usages of shared area. Hayushnayim mixas amosav shozeh. Now, the Gemara's question really is the next part of the Mishnah. Because in the next part of the Mishnah, as you look back to Memham and Beis, so then Rabbi Shimon jumps in. Rabbi Shimon gets really excited. Rabbi Shimon says, you know what it's like? You know what all this is comparable to? So it's comparable to the case where I have chaseros also set up in a row. And it happens to be that there's a Rishus Rabbim that they all open up to. But in other words, the chaseros now are in a row. And let's say, again, Chatzers A, B, and C. Chatzer A made an error with B. Chatzer C made an error with B. So now A and B are unified, they're incorporated. B and C are unified, they're incorporated. So now if you want to bring items from A to B, that's fine. You want to bring items from C to B, that's fine. But you can't go from A to C. And Rabbi Shimon says it's the same scenario. And so therefore it should be the same halacha. And what is implicit in the Mishnah does not say it, however, is that the Chachamim do not seem to agree. So, and all this now, the Gemara looks to explain. What is going on in this next part of the Mishnah of what is this comparable to? Hachi kamerluhu Rabbi Shimon li Rabbanan. Rabbi Shimon says to the Chachamim Mechti, Lamaha Davadama l'shosh chateros, Hapsucha zula zu psucha su rishos rabim, Umayshna hasam de palgisu, Umayshna hacha de lo palgisu. So in the case of the Chatzeros, so it's not explicit, but it's implicit in the Mishnah. And that is that the Chachamim don't agree with Rabbi Shimon in the case of the three Chatzeros. And so now Rabbi Shimon says to the Chachamim, now I'm totally confused. I know you don't agree with me in the case of the three Chatzeros for reasons which we're going to articulate in just a moment. But you, in the case of the three people, each one of them having four Amos, and the two externals are encroaching into the inner one, and you're telling me that they're allowed to share a meal in the shared area. So in the case of the three people and the Dal Amos, so you're agreeing with me, but in the case of the Chatzer, you're not agreeing with me. And they're the same thing. Lamaha davar doma. They're the exact same thing. So why don't you agree with me over there? So umashna acha de lo pagisu virabanan. And the Chachamim's response is as follows. Hasam afshe diurim. Hachalo afshe diurim. So the Chachamim say the difference is actually very simple. In the case of the, let's start with the case of the three people, each one of them having Dalet Amos. So over there, so how many people do we have to keep track of? And the answer is very simple, three. Meaning that C can eat together with B in the shared area, and A can eat with B in the shared area. And that's it. And now it's very simple, and it's not going to get confusing. Right? B is not going to take an item that he got from A and bring it over to C. I mean, he may do so, but likelihood is he's not going to do that because it's very easy to remember which foods he brought into the shared area, which food his friend brought into the shared area, and he's simply not going to take an item that originally started off in A and move it over to C. Fine. In the case of the chatzeros are highly populated. There are tons of people in each of the chatzeros. Once you give an allowance for people to go from A to B, so somebody else within the chatzer is going to pick up the item from B, think to himself, oh yeah, we have an Erev connecting B and C, and he's going to bring that item from B to C. And because there's so many people and it's hard to really control that which is taken from A to B, having it labeled and everyone knowing that that came from A, it started off in A, and it can't be brought over to C, so because of Afshi Durum, there's so many people living there, it's just not going to be easy to keep track. Ushtaim Achitzonis, we're at the bottom of Mem Chesem and Aleph, so Ve'amai. The Gemara now wants to go to this case of the Chatzeros and really wants to understand a lot better because the Gemara asks a very simple, straightforward question. Kevin Arvilahu Chitzonis, Ba'adeim Tsaus, Havilu Chada. The Gemara says, here's what really bothers me. In the case of the Chatzeros, there were two Erevin that were made, one between A and B and the other between B and C. And we're now saying that, at least according to the sheet of Rabbi Shimon, A can carry to B, B can carry back to A, B can carry to C, C can carry to B, but you can't go from A to C. The Gemara's question now is, according to Rabbi Shimon, who is the more lenient position, as we just established, but why he could, the truth of the matter is, he can be even more lenient. Meaning, why stop from going A to B? You should be able to go from A to B to C. and you should go back from C to B to A. And why? Because consider, an Erev was made between A and B. What does that do to A and B? So it unifies A and B. A and B no longer are two separate chatzeros, but now one incorporated area. Now, when an Erev is made between B and C, so what does that Erev now represent? So that now represents the unification of A and B to C, because B is no longer alone. B now has already been incorporated with A. So that when B makes an Erev together with C, so really it's B plus A making an Erev in C, and so therefore what I have is one large incorporated area. And so where exactly is the discussion, is the debate? Oh, you can take from A to B, but you can't take from A to C. For sure you should be able to take from A to C, because now the entire area is now one incorporated area. It seems to be such a strong question, and the Gemara is going to give two answers to this question. Amar Rav Yehuda. And Mem Chesam Adav, two lines on the bottom. So Rav Yehuda gives the following answer. Kagon Shenasna Imtzais Eruva Bezu, the Eruva Bezu. So where was the Erev placed? And Rav Yehuda says that the placement of the Erev becomes critical, and we're going to explain why in a little bit from now, but it's critical where it was placed. Consider that if we're talking about a case where B and A made an Erev, but they placed the Erev, meaning the actual basket of fruit, they placed it in A, that's significant. And then when B and C made an Erev, they placed the Erev now in C. Now, if you think about it, which we're going to do right now, so you're going to ask yourself, well, that shouldn't seem to make a difference. Meaning, aren't we back to the same basic point? When A and B made an Erev together, regardless of where the Erev is actually placed, if A and B made an Erev together, doesn't that incorporate A and B, making them one unit? So that now when B makes an Erev together with C, so it should do the same thing. So in a moment, the Gemara is going to ask that question, because at this point in time, it's difficult to understand just because the Erev itself is placed in the exterior chatzer, not in the middle chatzer, why should that make a difference? Stay tuned, the Gemara is going to ask that question. But anyway, that's answer number one. Admittedly, we don't fully understand the answer, but that's answer number one. Rav Sheshe Tamar, Filotei Moshe Nasnu Erevon Be'em Tzais. And Rav Sheshe says, no, we could be talking about a case where when A made an Erev with B, so the actual Erev itself was put in B. And when B made an Erev with C, so the actual Erev was put in C. I'm sorry, the actual Erev was put in B. And even if that's the case, what would be now holding back the Erev so that the entire area now is one large incorporated area? Kagon, so the example would be Shenasnuhu Bishnei Batim. So it was placed in two different houses. Meaning the AB Erev was placed in one house within B, and the BC Erev was placed in a different house within B, and that's what's holding it back. So the Gemara says on this answer, wait 1 second, come on, Kebe Shammai. The Tanya we learned in the Brisa, Chamisha Shagavos Erevon, Venasnu Bishnei Kelim, Bishamai Ormim, Ein Eruv and Erev, Ubeisela Ormim Eruv and Erev. Meanwhile, we have a machlokas. We're going to see it also later in this Masechta, and that is the idea that if, let's say, a Reuven collected from every member of the Erev, it happens to be there are five people in the Erev. So you made a collection where two homes put their food in one basket, and three homes put their food in another basket, and it was not all collected in the same basket. Is this Erev going to be a good Erev? Does this Erev now incorporate everybody? Machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says the Erev is no good. Beis Hillel says the Erev is, in fact, good. So that means to say that we see that according to Beis Hillel, even though it's collected in two different baskets, the Erev is going to be a good Erev. So you're suggesting over here that because the Erev is put in two different houses, it's not going to be a good Erev. And you're telling me what? That we're subscribing to the Shita Beis Shammai? We don't subscribe to the Shita Beis Shammai. So the Gemara says, Afilu Hecha, Afilu Tema Beis Hillel. No, over here we could be saying that this is going according to the Shita Beis Hillel. Ad Kan Lo Kamri Beis Hillel Hasam. Beis Hillel's position is Ela B'Shnei Kelim Be'Bayis Echad. When you put in two different kelim, but it goes into the same house, so Beis Hillel is fine with that. In other words, in two different kelim is not going to upend the Erev. It won't upset the incorporation of the Erev. However, if I put in two different houses, Aval B'Shnei Batim Lo, even Beis Hillel says at that point in time, that's not unification. Unification demands that this Erev is going to be placed in the same house. It doesn't have to be put in the same kli. For that, it could be divided into different kelim, but it must go into the same house. So the Gemara says, in that regard, Beis Hillel will agree. And because over here, now, the AB Erev was put in one house and the BC Erev was put in a second house, so therefore, we do not have incorporation with all of the Erevin. So, Amalei Rav Acha Breda Rav Avila Rav Ashi. So the Gemara now shares with us a conversation that takes place at a later historical time between amongst the later Amoraim. meaning the ones that were giving the answers to our question. The question is, why don't all three chatzeros now become incorporated? When AB makes an Eruv and now BC makes an Eruv, so we should have one incorporated area. That was our question. To that we gave answers. Rav Yehuda gave an answer. Rav Sheshes gave an answer. Rav Yehuda and Rav Sheshes were early generation Amoraim. They both happened to be students of Rav. Later Amoraim come along and say, I don't understand either answer that's given. L'Rav Yehuda Kasha, L'Rav Sheshes Kasha. And these later Amoraim say, I have difficulty understanding Rav Yehuda, and I also have difficulty, we have difficulty understanding Rav Sheshes. L'Rav Yehuda Kasha. So let's start off with Rav Yehuda. D'Amar K'gon Shnasa Emtsayis Eruva Bezu Ve'Eruva Bezu V'Kevin De'Eruva Emtsayis Bahad Echitzona Havi Lechada V'Chi Hadra V'Arva Bahad Eidach Shluchusa Avdei. So the Gemara here articulates the question against Rav Yehuda. And that is, placement of the Eruv is so significant. In other words, in the AB Eruv, it was put in A, not in B. In the BC Eruv, it was put in C, not in B. So they ask, okay, but so what? In other words, we have the AB Eruv, and it was put in A. Fantastic. But A and B now incorporated. They have now one unified area. So when B goes over to C to make an Eruv together with C, so not only are they making an Eruv, but aren't they acting on behalf of their partners? Meaning the A group is now partners with the B group. They've all been incorporated into the same unit. So now when B makes an Eruv with C, so isn't B now representing A? And aren't they now making one incorporated area? And so I don't understand what difference does it make where the Eruv is placed. Okay, so that was the question of Rav Yehuda. And before we get to an answer, the Gemara says, let's also share the question of Rav Sheshes. Now, let's consider the following. We know the basic halacha is that in order for an Eruv to work, so you need everyone within the chatzer to contribute. You have five members of the chatzer and only four of the five contribute. The Eruv is no good. Why? Because an Eruv simply does not work if somebody's left out. Once somebody's left out from the Eruv, so then the Eruv does not unify. It only unifies when you have every member of the chatzer contributing. Good. So now let's consider. I have an Eruv, the AB Eruv that's placed in one house. I have the BC Eruv placed in another house. Isn't that basically tantamount to now having an Eruv where four people contribute and one person does not contribute? Meaning what happens over here is that you have a division. You have some making contribution and you have some not. When I have my AB putting it in one house and the BC putting it in another house, so basically now within the B, don't we have two distinct groups? We have the AB group and we have the BC group. And for the purposes of Eruv, don't we need unification? Doesn't everyone have to make a contribution into the same Eruv? So the Gemara says, so in that regard, I don't understand. It shouldn't work at all. It's interesting, by the way. The question on Rav Yehuda is that regardless of placement, the Eruv should work, and the whole thing should be unified. And the question on Rav Sheshes is that once we're talking about where the AB Eruv is put in one house, and the BC Eruv is put in another house, so then none of the Eruv should work, because basically now you've created two distinct groups. And the definition of an Eruv is unification, and everyone needs to put in the same home. So Amalei Ravashi, lo. L'Rav Yehuda Kasha, v'lo L'Rav Sheshes Kasha. So Ravashi says no. Both of these answers are perfectly defensible, and we're going to go step by step. L'Rav Yehuda lo kasha kevin de irva la emtsais bahad chitzona v'shtaim chitzonas bahad hadade lo irvu gal yadaita de bahad nichale uvahalo nichale. So as far as Rav Yehuda is concerned, so what was the question? The question was really a question of shlichus. And as far as shlichus is concerned over here, we have to look at the context. Meaning, what did the middle one do? The middle one made first an eruv with A. And not only that, he put the Eruv in A as well. So now when he goes over to C to make an Eruv together with C, so what did we want to argue? That really B is acting on behalf as a shliach on behalf of A. Well, the truth of the matter is that if A really wanted to make an Eruv together with C, so he would have indicated so. By virtue of the fact that the only one that A negotiated was with B. And not only that, but then the Eruv was put in A as well. It's a pretty clear indication that A only wanted to make an Eruv with B and not with C. So that when B turns around at a later point in time and tries to make an Eruv with C, so they're not acting on behalf of A, because it was pretty clear that A did not want to participate in an Erev with C. They only wanted to participate in an Erev with B. Okay, so it's Giloy Das, meaning that basically we can see the context of the scenario and pretty much deduct that A did not want to make an Erev together with C, and so therefore there's no Shlichus. There's no operating Shlichus. Ula Rav Sheshes Lo Kasha. Now, as far as Rav Sheshes is concerned, that doesn't bother us as well, because Imamr Diyurim La'akel, Yomr Diyurim La'achmer. Because look, what is the institution of Erev? The institution of Erev is telling us is that anyone who's living here is going to now make a contribution incorporating everybody. Everybody now is going to be incorporated together. And this institution of Erev is really a kula, meaning it's a leniency. It gives allowance for people to carry from their house to the chatzar, from the chatzar to somebody else's house, etc., etc. So diurin are there to be a kula, to present a leniency, because that's really the entire institution of Erev. But here's what Erev is not going to do. Through the formation of an Erev, we are not going to now view that as its own separate residence. Meaning just because the AB group put their Erev in one person's house and the BC group put their Erev in somebody else's house, the construct of the Erev is not going to now inform us that these are two distinct and separate groups. Meaning its Erev is only there to provide kulas, it's not there to provide chumras. We're not going to look at these two homes and say, oh, look, these two homes now are two distinct groups because one Erev is put in one, another Erev is put in the other. To that degree, we're not going to say that an Erev is going to create a chumrah. At best, an Erev can only create kulas, an Erev cannot create a chumrah. And so therefore, when AB makes an Erev and puts it in one home, and BC makes an Erev and puts it in a separate home, so the AB Erev is in fact going to be fine, and the BC Erev is going to be fine. What about within the B chatzir? I have an Erev in one house and an Erev in another house, and doesn't that now separate the members of the B chatzir? The answer is no. Because that's not what Erev does. Erev does not create chumras. Erev can only create kulas. The entire institution of Erev is only there to create kulas. Adkan, this will take us to the end of the daf, gives us a chance to review, and we get to pick up from the bottom of Mem Chesem and Beis tomorrow. In the meantime, just as a quick review, a couple of things. One, we went over the incident of Mavrachta. Animals were taken, rams were taken to Mavrachta and Yantiv. Rava allowed the people of Mechuzah who got to Mavrachta via an Erev Trum themselves. So he allowed the people of Mechuzah to go ahead, buy the animals and Yontav in Mavrachta, bring it home to the town of Mechuzah. And to that, he was criticized for such a psak, because that psak assumes that the animals that were owned by non-Jews going into Yontav do not have Trum. And that's the Shita of Shmuel, but that's not how we pass. We pass like Rav Yochanan, and that items owned by a non-Jew take on the tchum of their non-Jewish owner. And so therefore, these animals were bound by tchum going into Yantiv, and so therefore, you cannot take these animals out of Mavrachta. Mavrachta is an enclosed area. They can go within the entire perimeter of Mavrachta, but they cannot be taken out of Mavrachta. And Rava, in fact, retracted from his psak. That was our first topic. Our second topic was the brisa that Rabbi Chiya says over, that when I had this pond that was situated right between, right at the edge of tchum of two different towns, so you need a mechitza shel barzel, you need an iron wall separating them, because so there should be no water going from one side of the pond to the other side of the pond, because then there would be a violation of tchum. Much discussion about that brisa in terms of the necessity of iron walls. And when all said and done, there was some reaction to the brisa that was not flattering. And the reason why it was non-flattering reaction to the brisa is because we're talking about suspended walls over here. The walls that were in the pond didn't go all the way down. But nevertheless, we know that when it comes to suspended walls, even though in general they are not accepted as walls, but when it comes to water, they are in fact accepted as walls. The Gemara went on to discuss the when you don't have tchum for whatever reason, you fell asleep according to the Chachamim, you were extracted from your tchum, whatever the case is. If you don't have tchum, you have four amos. So in the Mishnah, a question of how to measure those four amos, the Gemara clarifies that the difference between the Tanakhama, the Chachamim of our Mishnah, and that of Rav Yehuda, is that according to the Tanakhama, which is Rav Meir, you actually are given a total of eight amos, four amos in every direction. Whereas according to the Shita of Rav Yehuda, you're only given four amos. You can choose those four amos if you want it to be to the north of you, south, east, or west of you, but it's only limited to four amos. the Gemara seeked a source in the Torah for this halacha of Dalan Amos. The Gemara quotes the pasuk from Parshas Bishalach, the amount of area that you would basically need in order to lie down, which is a total of 4 amos. How does your lying down get to 4 amos? The Gemara had two ways to get there, meaning the height of a person, 3 amos, that extra amma, debate between Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda, how to get that extra amma, and the Gemara also noted a nafkamina between these two positions. When measuring the 4 amos that a person is going to get on Shabbos under these circumstances, is it going to be objective or subjective, the objective unit of an amma, or is it going to be subjective based on whatever his amma is? And when sent to the shir of Rav Papa, they were asked of Rav Papa, which one is it? Rav Papa first was critical about the whole idea that you're really slowing down in your learning. You should speed up and cover more ground. And on top of that, he says the answer is that it's subjective. And then the backlash, not the backlash, but why wasn't the Mishnah in Kalim in the 17th Perek? So Rav Papa had an answer. The last thing we discussed was the chatzerus of A, B, and C. B being the center chatzer, A and C being the two exterior chatzeros. Rabbi Shimon says that A and B can make an eruv, and B and C can make an eruv. And if that's what happens, so then A and B can carry one to the other. So can B and C, but A cannot carry over to B. The question that was asked in the Gemara is, once A and B make an eruv, and then B makes an eruv with C, so aren't we incorporating now the entire eruv? The Gemara gave two answers to this question, Rav Yehuda and Rav Sheshes. Rav Yehuda says, well, if the AB Erev was placed in A, and the BC Erev is placed in C, so then it's not all incorporated. And after a little bit of back and forth, so the Gemara says, what's really behind the sheet of Rav Yehuda is Gilui Das. By virtue of the fact that A and B negotiated to make an Erev, and they placed an A, that is a Gilui Das, that's clear indication that A is only interested in making A Erev with B, and not with C. And so with that Gilui Das, so that tells us that when B and C are making an Erev subsequently, so B is only speaking on behalf of B, B is not speaking on behalf of A. Okay. And then the other opinion was that of Rav Sheshes. Rav Sheshes says that the reason why the whole Erev is not incorporated is because the AB Erev is put in one house within Chatzar B, and the BC Erev is put in another house in Chatzar B. And as a result of that, that clearly indicates that they were not looking for full incorporation. And even though we had machlokas Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel about accepting the Erev in two different kalim, but there is no machlokas with them as it relates to where the Erev is placed in two different houses. The Gemara wonders if now you have the AB in one house and the BC Erev in another house, isn't that create a division within B? And the Gemara says no, because the entire institution of Erev and Chatzeres is there to help us, not to hurt us. And so therefore, A and B is going to be Ma'urav, B and C are going to be Ma'urav, but that's why we're not going to have a full Erev of A, B, and C.